Whiskey?
Yeah, I've never heard of her.
Do you ever communicate with her on Facebook?
No.
Oh, she's on Facebook. So that means, in theory, you could.
Yeah, I'm not on Facebook. Social media.
Yeah, I don't like Facebook either, but you could get someone else to communicate with her. So do you remember what it was like day to day there? You know, like how often did you get involved with Russ or with Jim. Sal or Jim or
well,
did you just let them do their own thing?
Well, okay. I was pretty heavily involved. I do not remember day to day, but
yeah.
A lot of things were going on, so I was pretty heavily involved.
Were you trying to protect the project from above? That's what sometimes someone at your level does, make sure no one cancels it or tries to accelerate the schedule.
I had no serious problems in that type because Jim Troy was a lab director.
Uh-huh.
But the management structure that was set up,
mm-hmm.
I actually, most of the time, reported to a guy in White Plains.
Oh, okay.
And
he didn't know what you were doing? Or
Jim was the lab director in all the technical activity in the lab. Advanced technology and product engineering and all that was, of course, in Jim's. But he was not directly responsible for the product development itself. And what happened is...
So it's a matrix organization. So you reported to somebody who was not responsible for the product, but on the other hand, you were responsible for the product. So
the guy in White Plains, a guy named Don Spaulding, which I think our director of engineering was very wise, he brought a guy in from the field and named him the director of product line management.
Okay.
Reported to him.
Okay. So he had all the other unit record stuff as well?
And he was out of the customer world and the market world, and he kept you focused on, you know, not necessarily the technical stuff you're doing, but what are you doing for the customers?
Mm-hmm.
And so Don was a very, very helpful guy.
Did he try to get you to focus on the entry model a lot, you know, the two cubes as opposed to the whole system, or he didn't care at that level?
No, that
was your thing. You were trying to focus on the entry, the $2,500 thing.
That was Fran and I back from our background in unit record installations. We understood the punch card world pretty well.
Yeah.
And so that was our focus. And, you know, it comes through that we had nothing but focus on the entry, but we felt that you establish that base and everything else will take place.
Now, I've been a little confused about something over the years. You talk about in your write-up you had to meet $25,000. Right.
Cost. For the whole system.
And that was just the two cubes?
The entire system.
No tape drives, though.
Printer, battery punch, and processor.
And half of this. Not these two sections, but just two cubes, not four cubes. Was that the $25,000? Right? Because
the left part, you only need the right part.
Adding the extra tube was not, I don't recall precisely, but adding the extra two cubes, it was no big deal. It was basically what's required for the entry system.
Yeah, the entry system, which was the left.
So
how does $25,000 relate to the $2,500 lease price? That's
in that time frame.
That was the
depending on the volume of your program.
Right.
About 10-to-1 ratio.
You were just using that approximation.
It was approximate 10.
And everyone realized it was approximation, probably.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Finance people set the actual final word.
Yeah.
So
could you have kept, not have purchased the hat that you had to buy if you could have argued there was a different ratio? See what I'm saying?
No,
there's the famous story where he had to go buy a hat because you instead of $25,000, it was $25,000 and $100 or something?
I think it's $50.
But if it's an estimation for the ratio, how...
we missed by $50, but we didn't have a big debate on that. I had a lot of respect for Don. Anyway, I've told you, I think, the rest of the story. After shipping. You may now make the next program cost. And the manufacturing cost for the total production plant that time, which I think was 5,000 units, went down by $80 million. So the total cost now is projected to be $80 million less than it was.
To make 5,000 systems. Is that what you're saying? To manufacture 5,000
5,000
systems was $80 million in those dollars.
So,
okay.
So what happened is that now, after I found that out, the next thing I saw was that the profitability percentage of the 1401 system had gone down.
Right. Because that's about $10,000 per unit. 80,000 divided by 5,000 is one, a little more than that.
So finance had lowered the system is profitability leverage a certain percentage and gone down. And I was furious. But finance would not tell me, you know, none of my business. And finance, that's their view. I mean, they would protect me. But I had now started shipping, and I was now administrative assistant to the president.
Uh-huh.
And I told him what was going on, and I wanted to understand what the heck happened.
Right. Why the manufacturing cost was so high, you mean?
Finance was due to come in, present to him the story, and I told him, and he said I could sit in, which I did. Finance tried to kick me out of the meeting, but he told him to go ahead. Well, what had happened? One of the key elements of the profitability projection for a system in those days was what the average rental was.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the systems were on rental instead of purchase. And what finance had done, the word generally was, well, this thing is going to look too profitable. So they reduced the estimated rental life in the field. Literally.
They reduced the estimated rental life in the... Oh, Mike, that's cheating. Like, just to get their... just to lie with the numbers.
It's the financial guys, and that's the way they had shown reduced percent profit.
So, okay, so... But you couldn't reduce the manufacturing cost still. That was still whatever it was. I thought that was what you complained about first.
It was $80 million lower than we had initially estimated. So the manufacturing cost was down.
No, but you... $80 million lower than you. Oh, so you said it was how much originally?
I don't know the actual numbers of the total number of systems, but the total manufacturing cost for after we were in production, the next program estimate, the total manufacturing cost for the same number of systems went down $80 million.
It went down $80 million.
Hmm?
It went down $80 million.
Yeah.
But you don't remember what it came down from.
No.
Okay. Okay.
And. All I knew is that profitability should have been shown up to be better.
Right, and then it didn't. Yeah.
It showed up to be worse.
So, but in general, you were okay with the manufacturing cost of the system?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
I wasn't sure with that.
No,
but you just said you weren't
that,
okay with it. Okay. It just these guys were trying. They seemed to always be working against you, the finance people, because when the system, they didn't want to launch the system beginning because they thought that no one would use it, and there would be only 5,000 systems sold. That's what Shell Jacobs, his story, right? And so.
Well, you see, finance didn't like the way we were set up anyway, because at the time I was called area manager. Later they were calling them systems managers. And systems manager had the responsibility for certain scope products in the field and the revenue and profitability level and the follow-on system.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And they knew what the profitability level and the profitability of their follow-on system.
Mm-hmm.
Finance never did like that. These damn engineers, they'll give away the store if you let them. So they had a problem with that for quite a while.
It's a control thing, yeah.
So,
well, but the 360 was too expensive, so that...
Well,
no one can win.
The 360 turned out to be a very successful deal, of course, but it took a while.
Well, the Model 20 helped, right, because that was very successful.
Probably.
But it was, of course, incompatible with the rest of the 360.
Oh, to some degree, yeah.
Yeah, and...
I never got very much involved with the Model 20. As I recall, the German lab and...
Mm-hmm.
Carl Gontorm and all those people.
It was just a subset of the construction.
Yeah.
Pardon? It was just a subset of the 360.
Right.
Yeah. So I had one more question on the tape drive thing. So you, Bo Evans, had been pushing you to put the towel into this thing, and you had been resisting.
Well,
and because you didn't want to, you know.
That story gets confused, it seems, although I thought I stated it accurately in my so-called 421 story.
Yeah, we have it on our website.
We were definitely going to do a tape attachment to 1401. It was a question of when and what priority we gave it.
The very beginning you thought you were going to do it, before Evans?
Yeah. I just mentioned these guys. Once we decided to use the 1403,
mm-hmm.
I started interacting with Joni Dager, developing the 1403,
mm-hmm.
and basically said, Joni, we're going to wipe out your product.
Right.
He's building a tape to
right.
print.
Tape to print, right.
And we're going to wipe it out. We don't have an emphasis on doing it initially because I personally don't want to get diverted. But Fran had already done some work on architecting, making sure we didn't do anything that would be a problem attaching tape and grids. And we were definitely going to do this, but initially our focus was on card to print and tape to print, not a tape processing system. We did not give a lot of focus on that. One reason is I never personally spent a lot of time on that, is well, I figured a 4,000 character 1401 system is not going to be a very good tape processing system, with the computing level we had. But tape attachment itself was definitely going to happen.
Okay, so you did have it on the original plans.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because the story, the way it came across, from Shell, was that it wasn't until Bo Evans asked you to put it on for the, so it could be a spooler for the 7000 series machine.
That's a timing question. Mm-hmm. And what happened, we now are far enough out until the system cost and everything is solid.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't too worried about getting diverted. But we had not attached tape to the 1401 for our product testing. And so I was not going to delay the announcement of the 1401 itself in order to now attach tape and go through product testing.
So you saw it as a second phase of the curl later.
Yes, okay. And yeah, Bo came on board and pushed. The reason Bo was pushing so hard.
He wanted as a spooler for the 7000 series.
Well, the 7070 got in trouble. He was developing Endicott.
Mm-hmm.
And Bo was sent up to save the 770.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
One of the thrusts to help do that was an offline 1401 print, tape to print, I.O. operation. And that's the reason Bo was pushing it so hard, was to save his 7070.
How would that save the 7070? Had all kinds of problems. It wasn't compatible with the old 650.
It made it a much better total system to have 1401.
Well, was that the first 7000 system, the 7070? Was that the first one? No. So no. It would have helped the other ones as well. It would have helped.
Well, but they were not in charge. They were doing
7090.
All right. 7010 and...
And the 7090.
Oh yeah, they were all doing well. They did well, but the 7070.
But before you had, but wait a minute. So the 7090 came out about the same time, right? Or a little before.
I don't remember the timing because I did not focus on the very high end system, so I don't remember the timing. But we had the 705, 701, 702, 705, 7080, 7090. All those high-end systems. But the 7070, my recollection, was before the 709, was after the 709.
Okay.
And that's my
idea. I think you're right. Yeah, it was delayed. I think it was delayed.
And it just overall, in terms of the marketplace acceptance, needed a better overall system.
For business applications, they needed to have the access to this guy. 14.
Having a much more efficient I.O. operation.
And this printer. And the 14.
Printer, obviously, sure. So that was the reason Bo pushed that very hard. And what I then was able to do was we had spent a lot of time product test was really ringing out printers. Printers had always been a problem. Mm-hmm. And with Joni's tile and tape to print system, they were ringing the heck out of the 1403. Mm-hmm. And 1403 on the 1401, they were testing the devil out of that. Mm. So they had a lot of experience, including the 1403 itself and the tile unit that Joni developed for his tape to print.
So you're saying that, Joni, at the same time you're doing, let me get this straight, at the same time you were designing the 1401, Joni was had a tile from the 7000 and was incorporated in his thing, which got canceled eventually, but he put it there and he was going from tape to print in his environment?
He just had an offline tape to print.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. He built an offline tape to print thing using the towel from the 7000 series. That's where this towel came from. It came from the 7000 guys. Right? Or he designed his own.
Whether his specific towel, how much came, but it was a tape control unit for the 1403 tape to curl.
He must have designed it, you're saying.
He did a lot of the design. Mm-hmm. I know that because Endicott Lab was doing a lot of testing.
Yeah.
And anyway, through that combination.
So he tested the printer, you're saying, through that combination. Mm-hmm. He ran this guy. This 1403 in that configuration.
Well, we had our 1403 connected to the 1401.
Yeah, but he had one connected to his thing.
Yeah, sure.
So I had the impression you canceled his thing and his work all stopped. But what you're saying is it kind of kept going. It was a good test bed.
It kept going until...
To refine this guy, basically.
Well...
Because he knew it was going to be canceled because he knew you were... Or he wasn't sure
yet.
He had hopes that it wouldn't be canceled.
You remember what he said. You guys with your lofty goals of the 1401, I've seen lofty goals before.
Okay.
He was an old pro.
Uh-huh. He was going to hedge his bets.
He joined in the early 30s. And, you know, he said, I've seen these lofty goals before, you guys. So if you think I'm going to stop anything, you're nuts. So he went on, and late in the game, Bo was pushing it, of course, but I was able to get product test without attaching and incorporating the towel into the 1401 mainframe
mm-hmm.
to do an evaluation to convince them that we would have no trouble incorporating the towel in here and using it and having the tape available. So I didn't have to delay and attach tape and go through product test and all that.
So you mean you got product tests to say that when the time came to do it, it would just work pretty well, is what you're saying. And they didn't actually prototype anything. They just argued.
But they did a lot of evaluation. Product test in those days was really meaningful.
What did they do then? What do you think product test did in this case?
Well,
they did
technical evaluation of all the experience they had with Joni's tile and how we would use that towel in the 1401.
Well, you ended up using the towel from the 7000.
When you say 7000, I'm not sure what that means.
Well, it was designed using all the circuit levels of the 7000. It's got 7000 transistors and stuff in it.
Well,
do you think that's not where it came from? Do you think it came from Joni?
His group developed the towel.
That towel came from Joni's group, you're saying?
You point to it.
Well, it's in this.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Right here. So it came from Joni's group, you're saying?
That's my recollection.
That's your recollection? Okay. Oh, we always wondered where it came from. It looks like it came from a 7000 series computer.
Well,
but
it depends on...
It uses different transistors. It uses different logic levels. It's like a little beast that put inside the 1401.
I would not be surprised at all if Joni's technical people didn't use a lot of this stuff from... There were tape control units already, of course. And I'd be surprised if they didn't use a lot of stuff from those in his tape control unit.
So the 7000 could have taken it from Joni's.
I don't know.
But you're suggesting because he had the expertise in tape.
I don't know the answer.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you remember anything about this, George?
No, but when I go to Binghamton next month, I'm going to see Byron Rucker, I'm going to say, where did the towel come from?
That's a good idea.
So when did Joni's project finally get canceled? Right before the
I don't recall the actual timing.
Okay.
But that was the other factor that led me to push to go ahead and get the tape announced because...
To do what?
Didn't get the tape announced on the 1401 because I obviously did not want to see IBM announce his tape to printer control unit and then 6 months later have it wiped out. So that was the other motivation to let's go ahead and get this thing announced. But I have seen this and that where we never considered tape in 1401, which of course is just not accurate.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that I asked this question. Yeah. So because, well, did you realize that so many customers would end up buying the tape version of the 421? It was estimated that about half the customers ended up getting those.
Well, but there's two or three questions it raises in my mind, which most of them I don't know the answer to.
Yeah.
How many of those were used for tape to card, tape to print, and not tape processing systems? And how many of them were used really on 1460s and expanded memory?
Well, we can kind of get an estimate because the way we come about this is the average selling price that the industry recognized 1401 systems to be quickly moved up to not these low numbers, but like $9,000 a month. So,
can you tell what the customer was doing with them?
No, but we know. But we know based on volumes that tape to print, that was all for 7,000 systems. There were only several, like 500 to 600 7,000 systems ever sold. So if you have 10,000 systems, of which 5,000 are tape, you know, at the price point of a tape unit, only 600 of those are 7,000 systems. So the rest are all, Time Warner, Time Life was the best example. They did tape processing. They had 30 million punch cards, which they switched over to magnetic tape and did everything. They just used punch cards for input and did all their work, sorting and whatnot, with magnetic tape. And they were your first customer. You were there when the system shipped.
Time Life for a long time, I don't know how long, used the 1401 for printing, period. Cards. They had a huge deck of cards initially.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, in...
Punch cards?
1955, IBM built a special machine for Time Life. Not serographic printing.
Some kind of print.
Some kind of
early print. But.
Yeah, and it was a special machine built for them. And it had a selenium drum where the cards would go by and transfer the image of that, and then it would move around, transfer the image to the labels. And IBM built four of those machines for Time Life in the mid-50s. And the reason I know is I happened to be in management school in 1955, got a call from my boss, Larry Wilson, and said, you got to come back. And I got a special project. And I said, what the heck's a special project? Well, Tom Watson got a call from the head of Time Life and said, we understand you people with these special machines you built for us would have some trouble maybe with the printing, but why can't you feed these cards through this machine? What had happened, they were having card jams with the feeding the cards through and around the drum and what have you. And the head of Time Life was not pleased. So anyway, I got the job from Larry to look at the card pass and get some redesign and get some parts made. And I spent four long weekends in Chicago in the 55 time frame probably. Tearing down, at the end of the day on Friday, we would tear down one of those machines and put in a whole new card path and have it running again Monday morning.
Very hands-on.
Opened up.
Did you have help? It was not you? You
may have help with me.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean? Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Had the best model maker in the Endicott lab with me, Charlie. But four weekends in Chicago wasn't my desire at the time.
So you were saying that Time Life used their 1401 initially to do what? To
initially, cards.
What do you mean?
Where they had the addresses.
And that was their whole database, it was on punch cards.
Yeah, at the time.
Yeah, and?
That's my understanding.
What did they do with all those? How do they involve the 14-1 initiative? My image when I read the article in Think Magazine was is that they took all their database and put it on magnetic tape.
Well, I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
But initially, I think it was they used had card to print.
Card to print. So they were just printing, having hard copies of the cards,
they could look at it. They had addresses on those cards.
Oh, envelopes. They were doing card to print for envelopes. Is that what you're saying?
Labels for the magazines.
Were they still using unit record equipment or for the processing rather than 14-1 processing?
No, what he's saying is that the initial use of the 14-1 was just to print these labels for the magazine. So they'd read in all the punch cards and use the printer to print.
I understand that. I'm asking where were they doing their application processing other than the printing?
I don't know. My understanding is they had the addresses of the customers punched in punch cards at the time.
Of course.
And they just ran those punch cards through and printed out labels.
Well, the question is, what kind of things do you do to the database, right? You insert, to all the punch cards, you insert, you remove.
I used to be in that business.
Really?
Yeah, it's mailing labels, direct mail business, service business. So.
That's what this machine was used for, by the way, in Germany, the 14-1. It was a subscription business.
We actually used the mainframe and after doing the processing. This is in the 60s. Uh-huh. And we didn't want to tie up the 14-03s. We actually took a PDP 11, PDP 20, and got a special interface. We drove the printer over that. We had to tape in just to drive labels. Printing.
So you guys had to move tapes between the two.
Yeah, exactly. Take the process in the mainframe, move it to the PDP to print.
Robert, I think you'd find there's a lot more tape to print offline than these few hundred systems you're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
7010s, maybe even 14-10s, I don't know. But see, none of those systems had great printers on them.
Right, so they were all being used for tape to print. Right.
Yeah.
They all needed 14-01s for tape to print.
That was my point.
Right. But we have that. We know the number of those systems sold, and there's not that many.
I don't know. Well,
we have the.
If you take 7010s, 14-10s, a lot of those, you're talking about more than a few.
You're talking about maybe 2,000 systems. So 14-10s was, I think 14-10 numbers were, I have a spreadsheet in my book. We have all the numbers for all those systems. So we know by month how many were approximately installed in the field for all the 7,000, for all the 7,000, all the 14-01s, the 1440, the 1460, everything IBM had. We have the by month counts, and so from that we could guesstimate how many, spooling systems were out there, tape to print or tape to card. And I can tell you, it doesn't represent, Well, there were approximately 15,000 1,400 family systems, and at least half of them were costed such that they had tapes. You can tell they had tape drives based on
at least half of them were.
They had tapes because of the cost of the system.
Sure.
Yeah, and so that's about 7,000 systems, and so maybe there were only about 2,000 of these 7,000 series out there at max. I think it's more like 1,200 or something. I had to look at the numbers. So what that's, and I, by the way, I found a memo written by some IBM exec that said, why didn't we get it that the best way to create tape-based systems in the field was going to be the 14-01? We totally missed that. Well, so it was an accident that seemed to have worked out well for IBM.
I don't know the answer to a lot of that, but I'm personally satisfied with the way it worked out.
Yeah, well, it seemed to quickly represent the transition from punch cards, storage of data on punch card to storage of data on magnetic tapes, and then, the disk drive eventually got cheap enough where, that was the next step. And then terminals came along, and then you could get rid of punch cards.
Well, see, I still don't know that you've gotten convinced of a certain picture.
I'll send you an email.
I still don't. I'm not convinced of that picture because a lot of, what printer did the 650 use for printing?
It had a horrible printer. It was some drum thing or something.
You used a 407.
Used the 407.
You used a 407 mechanical machine as a printer.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
But you know how many 650s were sold? Almost very few. About six.
I don't know what very few is, but it was very successful.
It was the world's most popular computer at the time, but there was only its numbers was only about no more than about 1,000, and
that was probably right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, oh, you're thinking though that people who are 650 owners may have bought 1401s.
I have no idea.
I don't think so.
I guess what I'm really thinking, and of course I don't know what percentage of the 1460s instead of the base 1401, and what percentage of the 16K memories and so on as opposed to the early ones. But my still expectation was that there would not be large quantities of the base 1401 4K machine used for tape processing systems.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I think that would be my expectation.
That's absolutely right. They're all 16K systems.
Now that would fit better than the...
I mean, look at the two systems we ended up with, right? Full 16K systems with tapes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I'll send you all this information. I'll send you a summary. You probably never saw this data of the total number of all system types. There was a magazine at the time called Computer Automation.
Mm, I remember that.
Okay. And he got it. He somehow was getting information from the Gartner Group, you know. And then around 1972, it cut off. Mm-hmm. And the number of systems a track became too large.
Yeah.
What was the original estimate for the number to be sold? What was the official argument? What was
1401?
Yeah.
Sheldon and I are not, I'm not sure we remember. My recollection is that the worldwide forecast was 4,700 systems.
And how many actually sold?
Well, it's somewhere around 15,000.
Well, it's somewhere around, something north of 10,000 for 1401s, but if you count the 1440, 1460, the 1410, and the 7010, it's 15,000.
So
the problem is we don't have a good feeling for how many were manufactured outside the United States. So we actually have a spreadsheet. I actually found in the IBM archive material, month by month, 1401 sales figures for the United States, but it did not include Europe. So, you know.
The estimates are interesting. I did, I worked with a product manager for the 1287 character, optical character reader, in the early 60s, and they had estimated to sell 200 units over 5 years, and there was still an alpha test, and they had orders for 500.
Oh, I don't think we've met. Martin Robert Grant, you're one of our new... Are you?
I've been around for years.
Are you doing our 1401 demos yet?
No.
You need to start doing those.
Yeah, why not?
So, by the way, it's getting kind of late. Where's the rest of your family and all that? Are they?
Well,
what's going to happen next year?
You know, they...